You know that feeling when your day finally slows down and you just want to relax, unplug, and feel good? That's where Mood.com comes in. They're changing the game, delivering legal THC products right to your door, no shady dealers, and absolutely no medical card required, just good vibes and better sleep, shipped straight from their farm to your couch. From delicious THC gummies, smooth vape pens, to premium THC flower, Mood has it all. And everything's federally legal under the 2018 Farm Bill. Yeah, this isn't some loophole. It's the real deal. Head to Mood.com and use code FIRST20 for 20% off your first order. That's MOOD.com. Find your mood.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Live from Liverpool, The Dark Paranormal, Season 21.
Hello everyone and welcome back to the debut episode of Season 21 of The Dark Paranormal. Now our mission here for this season is to make it better than what I believe has been our best season yet in our previous season, Season 20. Now although that is my opinion over Season 20, I'm not just saying that through some sort of bragging or bravado. I am saying that also through tangible email evidence of people writing in to say that Season 20 upped the game. So we're really looking to do that more with Season 21 and onwards. Because the more stories and experiences we receive, the more opportunities we have to pick out those real diamonds to make sure every episode has the same impact and the same quality of a season debut or finale. Now, aside from bringing back features like the video format for Dark Realms, we're also looking at one particular thing which is both new and also slightly risky from what we normally do. But I can't wait to share that with you and see how it lands. And if it doesn't land, it doesn't stay. Because, I will reiterate again, this is your show. So, as always, you know the format by now. We are a fluid show in terms of how we set up the season. Our season is laid out, and I believe it's one of our best. But we always have a fluidity within that structure, and I'm very much of the opinion that the right experiences or stories arrive at the right time. So if you believe you're too late for Season 21, you are not. Also, if you have a story which is shorter and you think I won't bother submitting, please do. Anything that's sent our way, we will find ears to listen to it. So please, either click the link in the show notes, which will direct you to the form to submit your story, or go direct to thedarkparanormal.com and click on Submit My Experience. Today's experience comes in from an anonymous listener, but it touches on something that we have discussed occasionally on the show. That thing being, what impact do our own emotions have on the paranormal things that go on around us? Now, personally, I've never been one for the 11/11 phenomena, etc. If people are and they find comfort in that, brilliant. But I've never been one of those sort of that means something type of people. However, more recently, I've started to see 11/11, 2/22, these sort of things. So much so, I've noticed it and thought this is a bit unusual. Also, coincidentally, or some could say through acts of synchronicity, random things have popped up to me, things which would imply that the things we think, etc., project our reality. And I'm not talking about The Secret or manifesting or things like that. I'm talking about subtle, subconscious things that may well have impact on the outer world. And who knows, perhaps today's anonymous submission is exactly that. Now, as always, with this being the debut, the intro will be slightly longer, so if you wish to skip to around maybe 7 or 8 minutes, we should be well in the show. However, I do need to make a quick point. The free trial period for Patreon appears to be an ongoing thing ever since I've emailed Patreon to ask why I can't see the tier to remove it, even though I've timed it to be removed twice, and it's still being used. So it looks like that free week tier is here to stay for the foreseeable future. So, by all means, feel free to go and take advantage of that. Head over to patreon.com/thedarkparanormal. Now, I've told you all many times why I think our paranormal community on Patreon is the best out there. And it's simply down to the fact that to me, it's borderline miraculous how this group of like-minded individuals, all with a common interest in a theme we all love, have managed to forge a self-governed, beautiful, welcoming society. It's filled with skeptics, believers, but the one thing that each and every one of our members have is respect for fellow members. There are zero egos within that community. I can hand on heart state that from all the comments I see. And believe me, without emotion, if I noticed someone came in to disrupt that group, I would remove them, no questions asked. It should be a safe space. It is a safe space and a supportive space at that. But what else do you get apart from being part of that wonderful community? You also get these episodes and everything on this main feed, both early and ad-free, and you can also gain access to the Patreon-only podcast, Dark Bites, which is released each and every Sunday of the year without fail, 52 times a year. And as our Patreons who've just experienced no break in play because they've got Dark Bites every week during the break in seasons, Dark Bites is a different show. We focus on the shorter aspects, the shorter stories that come our way, and we have more time to be more flexible. I can be more myself, and we can discuss the topics that arise. It truly is one of my genuinely favourite things to do. And just last season, we changed how we do the format of Dark Bites. So when I'm reading somebody's experience on Dark Bites, that is the first time I'm reading that experience. And it's really reignited my passion for the shorter stories and for the paranormal and podcasting in general. Because it means when I read those short stories, you're getting my genuine reaction throughout and at the end. And there is also, of course, the back catalogue of those episodes, which is now well over 120 hours worth of Patreon-only content for you to sit and binge at your leisure when you choose. And I'm not just saying this, but if I knew what that Patreon was, I would join that Patreon if I was not the host. So why not head over to patreon.com/thedarkparanormal and join our wonderful team, just like the following wonderful new members have. Hannah Boz, Rosie Root, Emma Mallison, Lawrence Waitlick, GN Zero, Diaz Churchwood, Devona Fisher, Carrie, Humberto Ruiz, Alexander Houston, Cindy, Talesi and Adam Brown, Alex Wilson, David Ross, Crescent Ice, Capmurica 26, Diane, Liz, Christine Seymour, YOLO 42, Disray, Iskalpeta, Essential Wellbeing, and Tula Day. Thank you ever so much, guys. Genuinely, you're keeping this train running full steam ahead, and I could never thank you enough. The link is in the show notes for our Patreon, or head over to patreon.com/thedarkparanormal. That free week is still up. And also, if you haven't heard your name yet, don't forget that standard for the start of a season. We have quite a bit of backlog, and we will get to you, believe me. But right now, it is my greatest pleasure to say, please, lower the lights. Make yourself comfortable and, of course, leave your disbelief at the door as we hear all about a child's wet footprints. Hi, I'm going to keep myself anonymous, but you may call me Sarah. I'm submitting this to your show because I'm a long-time listener. And I know that you and your audience take these stories seriously. And I need to tell someone what happened to me last October in Vermont. I'm hoping maybe someone else experienced something similar. That said, I don't want to reveal the location because I've not got permission from the owners. Hopefully, someone will recognize what I'm describing and be able to pick out where I'm talking about. I'm hoping to get either an explanation or closure because honestly, even writing this down, I'm still trying to make sense of all of it. I'm also hoping for this infamous cathartic feeling other listeners have mentioned whilst writing things down. Here's hoping. It all started after, basically, the worst year of my life. My marriage had fallen apart, or should I say, I missed the signs that were shouting when cracks were forming. I know that's a common thing with marriages when they fail. But here's the kicker. I am a marriage counsellor. Yet, to me, our relationship could have survived Armageddon. To him, largely thanks to my obsession with work and my blind spots, it became Armageddon. And I was totally blindsided on the day he texted me, yes, you read that right, texted me to say he'd packed his things and left for good, and he would be filing for divorce. It was like a bullet to the chest. My apparently perfect world collapsed in the click of a finger. Or should that be the tapping of a thumb? Obviously, I was absolutely floored for a few weeks, then a few months, although gradually things started to feel slightly better, although I knew I was still depressed. And being a walking trope, I found myself at a dog rescue in Burlington. I wasn't looking for a puppy or some energetic companion. I wanted something as broken as I felt. And that's when I met Bessie. Bessie is a 12-year-old mixed breed and had apparently been there for over a year. The volunteer told me she'd been surrendered with no background info. Just that she was a good, quiet dog. Nobody wants an old dog, she said unapologetically. I nodded but thought, I'm pretty sure nobody wants a failed marriage counsellor either, so maybe we're a good fit. And we were. Bessie was perfect for me. Grey around the muzzle, gentle brown eyes, and completely undemanding. She seemed to understand that we were both starting over. The problem was the house. Every corner held memories of David. The kitchen where we'd argue about my late nights. The living room where I'd snuggle into him, falling asleep watching trash. I needed to get away. To think clearly without the ghosts of my failed marriage haunting every room. No pun intended. And that's how I found myself booking a weekend at an inn which I'll keep anonymous, as I say. It's a historic bed and breakfast in Stowe, Vermont. That's as much information as I'm willing to give. The website promised rustic charm in a peaceful mountain setting. Well, that sounded like exactly what I needed. So when I called to book, I spoke to a gentleman by the name of Steve. I asked if pets were welcome, and he said they were, inquired about Bessie, her age, how long I'd owned her, etc., and we were good to go. The drive up was beautiful. October in Vermont is exactly what you'd expect. Beautiful reds and brilliant golds painting the mountainsides. A crisp air that made you want to breathe deeper. Bessie sat calmly in the passenger seat, occasionally looking out of the window, but mostly just content to be along for the ride. The inn sat at the end of a winding gravel road, surrounded by towering maples and what looked like original stone walls from the 1800s. Of course, the names I'll use, such as Steve, etc., these will be fictional names because, again, I do not have their permission. So, Mrs. Caldwell, the owner, met us at the front door. She was a woman in her 60s with silver hair and a warm, welcoming smile. She immediately made a fuss over Bessie, which I appreciated. And after we'd closed the door and walked in, that lobby had everything you'd want from a historic inn. Wide plank floors, a stone fireplace, antique furniture that looked well-loved rather than precious. She led us over to the reception desk and shouted, "Steve, where's the book?" Before reaching underneath, checking through some pages and handing me an old-fashioned skeleton-looking key. "You're in the maple room," she said. "Second floor overlooks the entire back garden and the mountains." She paused, looked down at Bessie, and said, "I hope you both find it so comfortable." The room was perfect. Not too large, but a massive bed. A reading chair by the window, which did look out onto the beautiful mountains. There was this amazing clawfoot antique bathtub in the bathroom. I looked out towards the rolling hills, the sprawling forests, and thought, yes, this is the place that you need to come to relax and find yourself. As I placed Bessie's bed next to my bedside and unpacked a few things, I noticed Bessie had already found herself and claimed her spot, circling twice before settling down with a contented sigh. For the first time in months, I felt I could maybe actually relax. That lasted about 10 minutes. I was hanging up my jacket when I noticed Bessie had moved to the door. She was now sat perfectly still, staring at the door with her ears forward, like she was listening to something. Something I couldn't hear. I went over and opened the door, checked the hallway. No one there. But when I turned back, Bessie had moved again. But this time, she was hiding under the bed. She had never hidden under any furniture in the 3 months I'd had her. I called to her softly, but she just pressed herself further back under the bed. A new place, I told myself. Different sounds, different smells. If they allow pets, she can likely smell other dogs. And dogs need time to adjust. I decided to let Bessie try and calm down and headed downstairs to ask Mrs. Caldwell about local walking trails in the area. I found her in the kitchen, with a man I assumed was Steve, who she shouted earlier. It turns out this was correct, and he was her husband. He was in his 70s, wearing a cardigan, and had a face that implied he was thinking about serious things, always. Mrs. Caldwell initially introduced him as Professor Caldwell, before jokingly saying, "or Steve," and mentioned he taught local history and folklore at the university before retiring. When I finally asked about the walking trails, she recommended a path behind the inn that followed an old logging road. Stephen stood up, nodded, and said, "That's a very good walk. How's your dog settling in, by the way?" In hindsight, this is an odd question, not "how are you settling in? How's your dog?" Everything seemed to be prefixed on the dog. But I thought they're an elderly couple, and clearly dog lovers. So I just said, "She's adjusting." Mrs. Caldwell quickly changed the subject, but I caught her giving Stephen a look, the kind of look married couples exchange when they've had a conversation about something and disagreed. "Do you know much about the inn? It has quite a bit of history," Stephen asked, ignoring what was clearly a warning glance from his wife. "I've researched the original owners, the Whitmore family, for years. Fascinating stories." "Come on, Steve, you don't want to bore Sarah with all that nonsense," said Mrs. Caldwell, giving a laugh that sounded slightly forced and slightly too long a glance at him. He looked directly back at her, looked over his glasses, raised his eyebrows and said, "Nonsense?" The tension was clear, but I was too polite to do anything about it except leave. I thanked them for the trail recommendation and I headed back upstairs. Bessie was still under the bed. A bag of treats and plenty of "come on girls" managed to get her from under the bed and we finally went out on our walk. And she seemed much more herself once we were outside. That trail was exactly what I needed. Peaceful, surrounded by autumnal colours, with Bessie trotting ahead, investigating interesting smells. But as we turned back towards the inn, she stopped dead. She began staring at our room's window. I, in turn, looked up, but I didn't see anything unusual. And although this could be a completely natural reaction for a dog in new surroundings, her reaction made me uneasy. That evening, I tried to settle in with a book by the fire in the lobby. About half an hour or so later, Stephen walked in, carrying what looked like files or folders. "Mind if I ask you what brought you here to Vermont?" he said. I gave him the short version, both for brevity and unsure if I'd break down in front of this kindly stranger. I just needed a quiet weekend, just to think things through with an impending divorce. He nodded, thoughtfully as ever, and mentioned that he'd taught folklore before retiring. I faked a surprised reaction, realizing he must have forgotten I already knew. "This place has quite a few stories attached to it," he said. "The Whitmore family lived here for 60 years before it became an inn." "What kind of stories?" I asked. He peered towards the kitchen where his wife was cleaning up. He leant in and whispered, "The kind my wife prefers I don't share with our guests." He sat back with a slight smile. "But can I ask you something?" "Of course," I replied. "Has Bessie been acting strange since you arrived?" "Again with my dog." I politely said something along the lines of she'd hit a few times and seemed slightly anxious. He deeply nodded, like this confirmed something. "Dogs are sensitive to atmospheres," he said carefully. "Especially elder dogs. Ones who've experienced trauma, like Bess." Initially, I froze, thinking, how did you know? And then I recalled he'd asked information when I booked. At that point, Mrs. Caldwell appeared in the doorway with a tray of coffee and toast. "Stephen, you're not filling Sarah's head with ghost stories, are you?" "No, we're just discussing the history of the place," he said. "Well, don't go scaring her off on her first night," she smiled at me. "My husband sees mysteries everywhere. Occupational hazard of studying folklore for 40 years. Again, I thought, I know. But after she went back to the kitchen, Steve leaned closer once more. "Sarah," he paused, "I don't want to alarm you, but if Bessie continues to act distressed, particularly around 4 in the morning, you may consider switching rooms." "Why 4 a.m?" "Just if it happens, and it may well not, but if it does, come and find us. We live in the attached cottage, and I'm often in the study on this floor just down the hall until quite late. Don't think you'll bother us irrelevant of the hour." The way he said it made my skin crawl. But before I could ask more, again Mrs. Caldwell returned, and the conversation moved to safer topics. I went to bed around 10, but sleep had no interest in coming to me, so I decided I would have a bath in that wonderful clawfoot tub. As I'd lay in bed for 2 hours without sleep, it was now nearly midnight, and probably a bit late for a bath, but I decided the hot water might help me relax. That clawfoot tub was one of the room's greatest features. And as I sank in the warm water, I finally felt some of the tension leave my shoulders. Bessie settled herself in the bathroom doorway, watching me with those gentle brown eyes. I lay still, closed my eyes, and I allowed peace to fall on me, literally for the first. And that's when I hear the first splash.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Soft, playful, like a child playing in water. I sat up quickly, but I was alone in the tub. The sound had come from the other end, near my feet. I told myself it was just the sound of my own movement echoing off the walls. I finally convinced myself. I lay back down, perfectly still. It happened again. This time, I didn't move an inch. I just opened my eyes. Small waves were moving in the water around my feet, as if invisible hands were gently playing. I got out of that tub so fast I nearly slipped on the wet floor. I dressed quickly and I took Bessie outside for some air. On our way back, Bessie stopped again and again stared up at our window. "Now's not the time, Bessie." I ruffled her hair and glanced to her focal point. Only this time, I saw what she was looking at. She was staring once more at our bedroom. I turned out the lights before we left, so initially it was dark and I couldn't see anything. But as my eyes adjusted, I noticed the outline of a small figure, darker than the darkness behind him. He had a hand placed on the window. I rubbed my eyes, certain I was seeing things. I looked again and he was gone. The window was empty, the room was as dark as I remember. Inside, I hesitated at the bottom of the stairs. Every instinct was telling me not to go back to that room, to go and find Steve. But apart from it being past midnight, every step I took, my brain convinced me I was seeing things. We climbed the stairs. Stephen's study door opened slowly. "Is everything all right?" he whispered. Now, normally I wouldn't mention what I'd seen. Maybe it was shock, the hour of the night, or the need for some understanding. But I told him what I thought I'd saw at the window. His expression grew serious. Steve walked past Bessie and I and placed a finger against his lips. With the other hand, he beckoned to follow us. When we reached the lobby, he sat us down. He said he'd rather discuss it here, as there was another guest staying on that floor. As we settled by the dying fire, he told me about the Whitmore family, specifically what had happened in 1889. The basic facts were simple enough. Thomas Whitmore's 7-year-old son had drowned in the bathtub. Thomas, the patriarch of the Whitmores, had garnered a small fortune early on with shrewd investments, only to lose the majority of his fortune on a failed building project. He turned to alcohol as a blanket, and that night he was supposed to be watching his son in the bath. Apparently, he ran the bath, made sure his son was in the bath and okay, and popped down for a quick tipple before intending to head back up. Some hours later, the boy's mother returned from town. Thomas was downstairs, unconscious, with an empty bottle of something or other to the side of him. Believing her son was asleep, she climbed the stairs quietly, peeking in his room, and noticed his bed was empty. Then she checked the bathroom and found her lifeless son. She died 3 days later. Records state grief as the cause of death. But Steve said it was local law that she took her own life. I guess they're not too dissimilar. Thomas doubled his drinking and drank himself to death within 10 months. Guests and even friends and family of ours have always said the Maple Room feels, well, occupied, Steve said, very carefully. Animals react to it mostly. Some sensitive guests will report unusual experiences too. Given this knowledge, I asked Steve why they'd put me in that particular room, especially if they knew about its history. "Well, because 90% of our guests have a perfectly normal stay," he said. "And the ones who do experience something, well, they usually check out early and we'll refund their money. It's not great for business, but my wife feels strongly about not turning the inn into some sort of ghost tour attraction." Well, that made sense, I supposed. Most people slept peacefully in that room and would have never known about its tragic history. So, what kind of experiences have guests mentioned to you? I asked. He said there were temperature drops, unexplained sounds, animals that would hide or act distressed. Some guests would even report seeing a child's figure, usually around 4 in the morning. I checked my watch. This was now 1 o'clock, so I guess I saw him earlier then. I tried to joke. Is this why you mentioned 4 a.m. to me earlier? Well, allegedly that's the time Martha Whitmore found her son, he said. A chill ran down my spine. I was about to tell him about the splashing water, but Stephen spoke first. Bessie's already been reacting, he continued. And although you're not sure if you saw this boy in the window, I know you did. A chill again ran down my spine. Stephen leaned forward. Sarah, I don't know what you believe about life after death, but I've been documenting incidents in that room for 20 years. There's definitely something there. He tapped the table and sat back, checking my face for a reaction. I wanted to argue to maintain my rational worldview, but with the splashing in the bathtub and the small figure at the window, it was all too vivid to dismiss. What should I do? Moving rooms does seem pretty appealing right now, to be honest. I forced a half smile. By all means, we can make that happen, he replied. But try to get some sleep tonight, and if anything does happen, don't try to communicate with it. Just get Bess and come and find us. He stood up. And Sarah, don't feel foolish if tomorrow you do want to leave or you want to change rooms. You wouldn't be the first, and I doubt you'll be the last. Back in the Maple Room, I managed to sleep on and off until sometime in the early hours. I woke to Bessie whimpering softly beside the bed. The room felt different, colder. There was a heaviness in the air, literally making it hard to breathe. I looked up and saw him. There, at the foot of my bed, stood a small boy, maybe 7 or 8 years old, naked. His hair was wet, plastered to his head. Water was dripping from his face, his limbs, onto the carpet. I rubbed my eyes hard, certain I was dreaming, and when I looked again, he'd gone. I regained my breath, and I determinedly told myself this was just some sort of vivid dream. Stress, unfamiliar surroundings, the power of suggestion, especially after Stephen's stories. I needed to use the bathroom anyway, so when I'd calmed down, I swung my legs out of bed and my feet hit the carpet. The soaking wet carpet. My first thought was Bessie's had an accident. Bess, I muttered, and I reached for the bedside lamp. Which is when I saw them. Small, wet footprints leading from the bedroom door to the foot of my bed. Child-sized footprints. I followed them backwards using my phone's flashlight, and they led directly to the bathroom. The prints were clear and distinct, the outline of small, bare feet. I stood in the bathroom doorway, looking at that beautiful clawfoot tub. A beautiful clawfoot tub where a little boy had died over a century ago. And for the first time, I felt genuine sadness rather than fear. Whatever was happening here, it had started with a terrible tragedy, a child's death, a family literally destroyed by grief and guilt. I even shed a tear thinking about
it. Please help me.
A voice spoke directly into my right ear, so close I could feel the breath against my skin. A male voice, slurred with alcohol, desperate and pleading. I spun around, but there was no one there. Just the empty bathroom and the lingering smell of something I couldn't identify. Not unpleasant, but not familiar. I ran back to bed, where Bessie was now standing, alert and protective. She positioned herself between me and the bathroom, hackles raised, but not growling, more like she was guarding me from something she hadn't figured out if it was dangerous or not. Well, I didn't sleep that night at all, and when morning came, the wet footprints were gone. The carpet was bone dry, as if nothing had ever happened. But I knew what I'd experienced, and I knew Bessie had seen it too. At breakfast, Mrs. Caldwell asked how I'd slept, and I spoke honestly. She exchanged a look with Steve. "Would you like to switch rooms?" she said, forcing a smile at the end. "We have a lovely ground floor room that you might like. It's much more comfortable." "Really?" I thought. "No follow-up questions, given what I've just told you?" I almost said yes out of politeness, but something stopped me. That would have been the old me. The new me knew I needed to look after both myself and Bessie. "No. Thank you, though, but I think I'll leave." Stephen stood and went to speak, but Mrs. Caldwell spoke first. "Of course, we'll ensure your stay is fully refunded." "Well, that's very kind of you," I replied. I smiled, headed back to the Maple Room, and quickly packed my bags before heading to my car. As I pulled away, I glanced in the rearview mirror to see Mrs. Caldwell standing in the doorway. Just for a moment, I thought I saw a small figure in the upstairs window. But this time, I both wasn't sure, and I didn't feel scared, just sad, and very, very tired. I can't describe what that trip done to me inside, but I felt renewed despite the horror of it all. I'm rebuilding my practice again, and when discussing with couples about failure and guilt, I'm using words and terms and phrases that I never would have used before, and I've no idea why, though the words I use now seem to resonate more with the couples than they would have before I had that trip. Bessie's back to her usual self and has never hidden under any furniture since, thank God. I do think about Thomas Whitmore sometimes. Trapped by guilt. Guilt that should have been grief. And his son, William. Waiting for a father who can never come back. I think about the choice we all face when we fail someone we love. We can let the guilt consume us, or we can learn to carry it without letting it destroy us. I hope this helps someone who may be facing that same choice. We all fail sometimes. The question isn't whether we're perfect, it's whether we're brave enough to forge ahead, even when our inner self is telling us we're bad people. The more you move, the more that voice loses its power, and you regain yours, despite any previous mistakes. I apologize if any of this sounds preachy, and if you choose to read this out, if anyone has stayed in a similar-sounding place in Vermont, run by a similar-sounding couple, and have experienced anything there, please email Kev. I know by Steve's own words that many other people have had a free stay. A free stay I'm pretty sure they would have sooner paid not to have. Best anon. Thank you, Anonymous, for providing us with our debut episode for season 21. And there are so many things to touch on within that episode. What do our emotions do in terms of providing energy to paranormal activity? We have discussed on previous episodes how certain emotions can seem to draw out certain types of activity, but guilt itself has never specifically been pointed at and used as an example. So for this experience, that's rather unique. And as our anonymous writer does say, if anyone does recognise, by the very vivid descriptions, any of the locations, or indeed may have even stayed at such a place, then do, as the writer suggests, email in to let me know. You can still email us for any suggestions or feedback to contact@thedarkparanormal.com. And don't forget, if you'd like to submit a story, you can click the link in the show notes or go direct to the website thedarkparanormal.com and click on Submit My Experience. But for now, and until next time, remember, when you're discussing the paranormal, always leave some of your disbelief at the door. And I'll speak to you next time for Episode 2, Season 21 of The Dark Paranormal.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.